You know, I'm very happy to be here, and so I'm gonna talk about this project I've been recently developed with Malifer. And I have to say, it's the first time I give a talk on this, and you know, it's not in the archive yet, and to some extent it's still a work in progress. But the reason why I decided to talk about this here is because I think, you know, this is the perfect arena to receive feedback, and I'm very curious to know what you think about it. In particular, because I think that this project, at least for me, is the beginning of a whole research program. This research program is about this notion of fine tunings. And I'm gonna precisely define them, but let me just say that with this notion, I think that you know, we can you know, find which is the common aspect among all the features of quantum theory that are inherently non-classical. So in a sense, it's like a way of distilling the mystery of quantum theory in a notion, and I'm gonna try to argue why this should be the case. Okay, this is the outline of what I'm going to talk about. I'm gonna start with a very general motivation behind this research program. Then I'm gonna talk about three examples of what I call operational fine tunings. And then I'm gonna develop a mathematical framework that includes this, and it's also more general. At the end, I'm gonna give an application of this framework in terms of the relation between contextuality and non-locality, as I think that the framework might shed a new light on this. Good, so the motivation. I think at least the starting point, I share it with most of the people here, I would like to get a better understanding of quantum theory. And with this, I mean, I would like to get an unambiguous interpretation of what is the nature of the reality implied by quantum mechanics. And I think the way to go in order to understand that is to first understand and single out which are the features that are inherently non-classical about quantum theory. And with this, I mean features that cannot be reproduced in any classical theory. Even when we are you know, very permissive with what is a classical theory. So not just, for example, you know, classical Hamiltonian mechanics, but also if we put epistemic restrictions on it, so like Speckenstein theory or stuff like that. So all the features that do not fit in there, I want to reckon them as inherently non-classical. And so far, it seems like that these features that we can consider as non-classical are the ones that arise from no-go theorem. So like, you know, Bell's theorem, Cauchy-Specker theorem, and also some other theorems that I'm gonna describe here. And every time, you know, it works like this, you have the statistics of quantum theory, the statistics of this hidden variable model or ontological models, and then, you know, you find these features of the ontological model that are not consistent with the statistics of quantum theory. And so you say that these are non-classical features. Well, if you look close at these features, you realize that they all share, you know, a common aspect that here I mean by saying that they involve some fine tuning. What do I mean by fine tuning? So the idea is that with fine tunings, I mean properties that hold at the operational level, but cannot hold at the ontological level. So with cannot hold, I mean that they only hold if I choose the values of the ontic parameters such that they hold. So just to give a more concrete example, so you all know Bell's theorem, the usual way to go in order to deal with it is to say, well, the world according to quantum mechanics is non-local. But if you accept this explanation, then it means that, you know, you accept the fact that at the operational level there is a property that holds, no signaling, and then at the ontological level this property no longer holds. So it's like saying there is nature that, you know, is hiding this property from you. And we reckon this property, no signaling, to be a fine-tuned property, would be a fine-tuning, okay, if you accept this explanation. So is it clear what I mean with the notion of fine-tunings? Yeah, so it's, yeah, it's a property of the operational level that cannot hold at the ontological level. So in, for example, in the case I was mentioning, like locality would be a fine-tuned property if you say that the world is not local. Yeah, you can say the same like for non-contextuality and for, yeah. Good. So, so I reckon that fine-tunings are bad notions, and bad, I mean, scientifically unacceptable, because they characterize nature with a conspiratorial connotation. And, you know, I think, you know, if you accept fine tunings in science, you might well accept, I don't know, the existence of Mickey Mouse or superheroes. So I think we need to deal with them. And I think there are, you know, two ways to deal with them. So, I mean, actually three. The first one is to accept them, but I reject that. Another one is to explain them as emergent. So you find a physical principle that explains why we experience such fine-tuned properties. So it's like saying, oh, you experience no signaling, even if in nature you can actually signal, just because there is a physical principle such that you are in a part of the universe, your space-time is such that you don't see, you cannot signal, or stuff like that. The other way to go is to instead develop a new ontological framework different from the standard ontological model framework, which is free of fine-tunings when it describes quantum theory. I mean, these are the ways to go. Yeah, so change the way the, you know, the hidden variable model framework is defined such that when you compare it with quantum theory, you don't have fine-tuned properties. This would be another way to go.
So for the first one, can you understand it in just kind of thermodynamics? So you could have your ontological model is all these like particles bouncing in the room. And I say, oh, it could be that they're all, you know, in the top left-hand corner, for instance. But you have this kind of explanation for why things are more or less like averaged out.
Yeah, so this is one of the typical example that people say when, for example, you want to explain, I don't know, you want to save, you know, you want to deal with Bell's theorem by saying that actually there is retrocausality, for example. You say, look, the reason why you only experience no retrocausality is because, you know, you are in this part of the universe in equilibrium, thermodynamic equilibrium, but actually, you know, the universe is in a block universe where there is no, you know, past and future, and therefore in this universe, you know, it doesn't make sense to talk about no retrocausality. But yeah, this is just, you know, maybe a bit bizarre ways, but just to see examples of what it would mean to have an explanation as for fine tunings as emergent.
That's the example of Anthony Valentini, where he shows.
Yeah, there is also the example of Anthony Valentini. Yeah, you see we are in the quantum equilibrium, but yeah. In the future, actually, we will see signaling. Yeah, this would be like ways of dealing with fine tunings and explain them as emergent. Okay, so just to say that, in a sense, this is so answering these questions is the goal of the research program. But at the moment, you know, in this talk, I'm not gonna say anything about this because I think that the first thing in order to address these questions is to properly define fine tunings. And you know, this is the you know, the topic of the talk. Good. So before I start with examples, so let me just say, so we are not the first one to talk about fine tunings. And actually, there is this work by Wood and Speckens, 2015, that you know motivated this research program in a sense. And but their notion of fine tunings is set in the framework of classical causal models. And so to use their words to define what is a no fine-tuning condition, they say the probability distribution induced by a causal model is not fine-tuned if its conditional independences continue to hold for any variation of the causal statistical parameters in the model. So it's like saying you have your statistics and you see which are the conditional independences. Well, the best explanation in terms of a causal model of these conditional independences is the causal model that even if you change the values of the variables, then you would still get the same conditional independences. So it's like saying what you know experiences conditional independences is not a product of fine tuning of the causal parameters. Well, I have to say that we want to keep some distance from this notion because I think this relies a lot on the fact that you know causality is fundamental, that you want to assume you know a notion of underlying causality in your ontology. Instead, here we want to be, in a sense, more minimal in what we define to be our ontology, and we want to just consider what we call operational fine tunings. So fine tunings that do not refer to any underlying causal structure. And this is what I'm going to be talking about. I want to give three examples of these operational fine tunings, but you know, before doing that, I want to review the standard ontological model framework where these are usually, you know, phrased. And so in order to do that, let me first start with what is an operational approach to physical theories. So even before we talk about ontology, according to this approach, what is a physical theory is just a tool to predict what are the statistics of outcomes given some experimental procedures we do in the lab. So that are just list of instructions what to do in the lab. And these experimental procedures can be classified into preparation, transformation, and measurements. And so the role of the physical theory is to give a rule to predict the outcome U given this preparation, transformation, and measurement. And under this light, quantum theory is the theory, the physical theory that associates density operators with preparations, CPTP map with transformations, and POVMs with measurements. And the only thing that matters about it is the Born rule, according to this approach, that allows you to obtain the statistics. Well, at this point, you could stop here, or you could say, look, actually, from my physical theory, I don't just want, you know, the predictive power, but also the explanatory power. I want to imagine that the reason why this rule works is because there is an actual physical system that is the subject of the experimental procedures. And this physical system has some properties that, you know, define it, and they are there even if there is no observer, no experiment on the system. And so we denote these properties with, we call them ontic states, and mathematically are just points in a measurable set that we call the ontic space. The experimental procedures relate to the ontic space as they can be described as probability distribution on it. So we say, you know, we prepare a system in the ontic state lambda with such probability. And then you can do the same for measurements and transformation. So transformation is going to be like a transition matrix, so matrix of probabilities. Good. The ontological model has also to provide, you know, the statistics, so the predictive power. And the way it does it is through the you know, the law of classical probabilities, in particular if you, you know, implement the law of total probability, given the preparation, transformation, and measurement representations, then you get the statistics. Good, this probably is all familiar to you, but what I wanted to highlight is that usually there are also hidden assumptions in the ontological model framework. And in particular here, I want to pin down the following. The first one is the free choice. So we assume that the experimenter, you know, can freely choose which are, you know, the input variables to the preparation, transformation, and measurements. Then usually there is a notion of causality, and in particular that assume that it's not possible to have, you know, retrocausality, which means, you know, no signaling from the future to the past, and what is called measurement independence. So, you know, that also the ontic variable cannot depend on what happens later, and, you know, I'm going to define them more precisely. And then this other assumption of lambda mediation that basically says that the ontic state of the system is the only thing that contains the information about the correlation between the preparation and the measurement. So it mediates between the correlation, the preparation and the measurement. So to be more precise, we can consider this prepare and measure scenario where we have like some inputs to the preparation and measurement and outputs. So with input, I mean variables that we can control, and with outputs, variables that we observe. And the assumption of non-retrocausality here is just, you know, the output of the preparation cannot depend on what happens later. So the choice of the measurement. And the what I call measurement independence is the fact that also the ontic variable cannot depend on R2. And, you know, by using this, you can simplify also what's, you know, the joint probability of the outputs. Lambda mediation just says that, you know, once you know lambda, you don't learn anything about U2 by knowing U1 and R1. So lambda mediates between preparation and measurements. Good. What I want to say is that, in general, we don't want to assume these things that are usually assumed in the standard ontological model framework in our notion of ontology. Instead, what we want to assume is what we call just an ontic extension. Okay, so what is an ontic extension? We say that an operational theory has an ontic extension if you can associate to any experiment in the operational theory. So an experiment is just, you know, a bunch of preparation, transformation, and measurement. You can associate an ontic space, and the probability distribution that consider also the ontic variables reduce to the operational ones if you marginalize out the ontic variables. So basically, it's a very minimal notion. It just says, look, to every experiment you have, you can associate, you know, an ontic space or a reality, and this must be consistent with the operational statistics. Okay?
So basically, you always have that. You always, in principle, one could imagine such a variance mathematically. It's consistent.
The question is if it's always the case that you can have this.
Yeah, given that the operational probabilities have to just add up to one, you can just introduce some lambda which makes that happen.
The question if this is not an assumption, but it's just always the case.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can imagine like different rules of probabilities. You know, people think about, you know, not classical probability.
Yeah, there wasn't any structures to it, the causal scenario.
Yeah, exactly. So the point here mainly is to say that we don't want to assume any causal underlying causality. Yeah.
I guess there was an ontic aspect to the assumption. Mathematically, I think it may always be the case that you can do this.
Okay. Good. Now I want to describe these three examples of what I call operational fine tunings. So the first one is the one of preparation non-contextuality. You know, here the idea is that the no fine tuning condition says that if you have two preparations that are operationally equivalent, so P and P prime give the same statistics, then this must imply the same equation to hold at the ontological level. So also when you consider the lambdas. So the idea is that if every time you experience two preparations to be operationally equivalent in principle, then they must be the same thing ontologically. You can phrase this also for measurement and transformations. And there is a no-go theorem that says that no preparation non-contextual ontological model is consistent with quantum theory. So if you buy that the word is preparation contextual, then it means that non-contextuality is a fine-tuned property. Okay? Good. I just wanted to start to associate with these theorems, like these schematic pictures. In particular, about preparational contextuality, I wanted to mention that you have two experiments, okay? Two input variables, such that you decide two different preparations. These are the outputs. Well, if operationally you see that these two gives the same statistics, this is what the equality means, then the no fine-tuning condition implies that this must be the case also when we consider the ontic variables. So this is just a way like of reproducing what I just said before in a schematic picture. I think it's quite intuitive, isn't it? Good. Then we can go to the second example, parameter independence. Usually, I mean, sometimes people just define locality as parameter independence. And usually it is framed in the, you know, it is described in the framework of, in the Bell scenario that I here briefly review. You know, there you have two parties. You have, you know, let's imagine, for example, a source of photons. You give one photon to each party. The parties go very far away, sparsely separated. And then each one has to perform a measurement that, so we denote the choice of measurement values with X, one of Bob with Y. These are like the R1 and R2 in the previous notation. Here I just want it to be consistent with the standard one for the Bell scenario. And the outputs are A and B, okay? So in this scenario, we want to assume parameter independence, which means that operational no signaling implies ontological no signaling. So what is operational no-signaling? It says that the outcome of Alice cannot depend on the choice of Bob, okay, on Y, and vice versa. The assumption of parameter independence, so the no-fine-tuning requirement here, says that this must hold also the ontological level, okay? And we can again represent it. We can imagine we have our two experiments where we have some pre-processing, so like, you know, Bob setting Y to 0, Bob setting Y to 1, and then marginalize out B. So this basically says, you know, the probability of A given X and Y equals 0 is equal to the probability of A given X and Y equal 1. This is just what this scheme is. And we want this to be preserved also at the ontological level, okay? But here we can imagine also there is some processing on the ontic variable, and I'm going to talk about this later. Then, in order here to find the no-go theorem, parameter independence is not enough. You have to, you know, define what is called Bell's local causality. And in order to define it, you need to assume both parameter independence and then another assumption that is called outcome independence. According to this assumption, the fact that the outcome of Alice does not depend on the value of the outcome on Bob and vice versa must imply this to hold also at the ontological level. Okay, so this is the assumption of outcome independence. So the fact that, you know, outcome of Alice does not depend on B, the value of B and vice versa, must be implied at the ontological level. Well, if you assume Bell's local causality, so parameter independence and outcome independence, and the ontological model framework, then you find an inconsistency with quantum theory. Okay, this is Bell's theorem. And therefore, you know, if you accept that you violate Bell's local causality, you're saying, you know, that locality is a finite. Good, the last one, probably is the least known here, is this time symmetry. And, you know, it was introduced in this paper by Matt Liefer and Matt Fusi. So the idea of this notion of this requirement of no fine-tuning is that operational time symmetry must imply ontological time symmetry. What does it mean, time symmetry here? So operational time symmetry, so the first part of the implication, is the following. So we say that a theory is operational time symmetric if for every experiment, so preparation, transformation, and measurement, there exists another one where the measurement and the preparation are swapped. So you see the input and output that were of the measurement now are of the preparation. And you see that this theory is time symmetric if the probabilities of these two scenarios are the same. Just to give you know, an example, quantum theory is operational time symmetric because, you know, like very trivially, consider the Bohr rule for, let's say you prepare the state psi and you measure and you get the outcome of the in the basis phi, okay? This is, you know, how you compute the Bohr rule. This is always the same as if you do the opposite. So you imagine that you prepare the state in phi and you measure and obtain the outcome in psi, okay? So the quantum theory is operational time symmetric. The requirement of time symmetry says that operational time symmetry must imply ontological time symmetry. So this fact has to hold also at the ontological level when we put the lambdas, okay? And here I've also imagined that you can have like a processing on the lambda, so a one-to-one map to another ontic state. There is a no-go theorem here as well, so no time-symmetric ontological model is consistent with quantum theory. Therefore, if you accept this explanation that time symmetry is broken, it means that time symmetry is fine-tuning. Okay? Good. We have seen, and let me represent this as well. So you have the two experiments. You imagine we call this operation that swaps the input or swaps the output as pi. It's just a swapping operation. And you want this to be preserved also at the ontological level. Okay? Good. So I tried to show these pictures here for these experiments because now I wanted to give an intuition on how we thought to generalize this notion of the requirement of no fine-tuning, in a sense that we want it to be as general as we can imagine. And so the idea is the following. We can imagine now that we have our two experiments, that each one can be subjected to some pre-post processing, in general, some stochastic maps that might also be connected, you know, the pre and the post processing, such that their statistics turn out to be equal, okay? So just to remember, with R, we denote the set of controlled variables. With U, the set of output variables, so the observable ones. Here we also introduce some intermediate input and output variables, and we denote these processings, these stochastic maps with F0 and F1. And so the requirement of no fine-tuning is that this must hold also at the ontological level. So when we had also, you know, the ontic spaces and the ontic variables. So this is the idea of our, you know, generalization of the notion of what is a requirement of no operational fine-tuning. And operational fine-tunings arise when this is, you know, broken this implication. Good. Let us now try to translate this into maths, okay? The next couple of slides are going to be a bit technical, but the idea is that, so, this left-hand side here can be rewritten basically as follows. You have our experiment on P, you act with some pre and some post-processing, and you have put also this variable C to say that the pre and post-processing might be connected in general. And so the requirement of no fine-tuning is as a property of an operational theory is no fine-tune if it is preserved at the ontological level, which means that this equation continue to hold at the ontological level. So when we put also the ontic variables and, you know, the, here we also have a processing that we call H0 that can, you know, map the ontic variable to a new one, okay? So this basically reflects what I just tried to draw in the figure before. Good. This is not enough because we need also to impose some consistency conditions. So the first one is the one of ontic extension, now referred to the ontic processing. It just says that if you, you know, marginalize out the ontic variables, you need to get back the operational processing. And also, I mean, this guarantees that, you know, also, you know, the implication from ontological equivalence to operational equivalence hold. Then we impose some structure preservation, meaning that we want to preserve, let's say, the structure of the processing. So if at the operational level we had, you know, a trivial process, like in the case of non-contextuality, if you remember, then we also want to have it at the ontological level. Same for a notion of composition of processing, same for a notion of convexity. And we will see that these are crucial in order to get the previous example, for example. Then the last one that maybe sound a bit weirder to you is this one that the output ontic variable must be a sufficient statistics for the input ontic variable, which basically means that the correlation that our ontic variable has with the other operational variable must be preserved after the ontic processing. And the reason of that is that if you don't, you know, impose this condition, you might think of a processing at the ontological level that just erases all the correlation between the ontic variables and the operational variables in a way that the no fine-tuning condition is trivially holding, okay? It's like saying that this quantity here is the uniform distribution, and you see that if you substitute the uniform distribution here, basically you obtain that this implies this, okay? So that there is no possibility of being fine-tuned, okay? So we had to impose this. Apart from the technicalities, let me just say one example of the three, how it reduces to the, so how it is accounted for in the formalism. This was the original, you know, operational equation in the, our definition. How does it reduce to the standard one for the non-contextuality, for example? Well, as I was saying, if you remember, for the non-contextuality case, the processing is just the trivial one. And this means, in these terms, that these pre- and post-processing are just delta functions, okay? There is no connection between the two, so this C is just the, is over a uniform distribution. And so this trivially gives you the operational equation for the non-contextuality, so that you have the two preparations, you know, with inputs R, that are operationally the same. The no fine-tuning condition that, you know, I showed you in the previous slide says that, given this equation, this other equation must hold at the ontological level, and given this structure preservation that we impose, we need to have that also the ontic processing is the trivial one, which means that omega is equal to lambda, and therefore we get back, you know, also the second part of the non-contextuality assumption, okay? So this was like probably the most boring case to see in our framework. I mean, if you're curious, I can show you the others later that involve a bit more calculations. But if not, I just wanted to, you know, move on to the last part of the framework, which is basically, so let me make this consideration. So far, you know, this notation also is quite cumbersome. You know, I've never used so many letters in equation in a slide, I think. But if you think better, you know, the requirement of no fine-tuning is just a requirement about a structure preservation between the operational and the ontological level. And in maths, every time you talk about structure preservation, you think about category theory and functors, okay? Even a guy like me that have never used category theory before. And indeed, it turns out that this notion of non-fine tuning fits very well in category theory. We can imagine the following. So we have an operational and an ontological category. So the operation, I want to recall, for people that are not familiar like me about category theory, that a category, is defined in terms of a set of objects and a set of morphisms. The morphisms act on the object, and you assume that, the identity morphism exists for every object, that there is a notion of composition, which is associative, and that's it. And in the case of operational category, our set of objects is just a set of the probabilities of the observable variables given the control variables. And the set of morphisms are just this stochastic map. So this, you remember the combs I draw in the previous figures that just map between these objects. Similarly, for the ontological category, we have the set of objects, which is just observable variable, ontic variables given the control variables. And then we have the processings that we have to remember must satisfy this sufficient statistics condition. Okay? And given that, now we can very simply, define what is the no fine-tuning requirement. We say that a property of an operational category, which is just, an equation of the objects of the category, is not fine-tuned if there exists a convexity presented being functor that preserves the property in an ontological category. So it's just a map between the operational and the ontological category that preserves this equation, this property. And since now, we are just talking about objects in a category, we can also, soften the notation. And we can imagine, preparation on contextuality. We can define with P the object that corresponds to the probability of observable variables given control variables, with Q the one of the other objects. This just means, the equality between the probabilities. And then the preparation on contextuality assumption implies that there exists a functor such that this is preserved at the ontological level, where I put the ontic variable on the left to remember that it goes on the left of the conditioning. And you can similarly define the others. You see, now we have much simpler notation and equations where we imagine, we can give a name to the processing. Y0 is the one that set, remember the y of Bob to 0, y1 to 1, and then you want this to hold at the ontological level. Similarly for time symmetry. Okay? Good. So with this, let me just recap and then give you this last application. So we have tried to define operational fine tunings as equations, so operational equalities between the statistics of experiments that involve stochastic processing, and this equation must hold also the ontological level. And we have seen that this fit very well in the language of category theory. Good. The application I want to give now is about the relation between non-locality and contextuality, mainly because I've never had like very clear ideas on this, even if I've been working on it quite a bit. So usually people say, at least for the Cauchon-Specker notion of contextuality, which is about sharp measurements and also has some other assumptions, but usually said that non-locality is an instance of contextuality, because your typical example is Bell scenario. You consider the four possible choices, combination of choices of Alice and Bob. These are the four contexts. You build a non-contextual inequality, which corresponds to the Bell inequality, and therefore, if you violate it and you have non-locality, this is just an instance of contextuality. This is usually, what is the case if you look at this, the graph theoretic approach to contextuality or the shift theoretic approach. But here, the question I wanted to ask is, what about like the generalized notion of contextuality, I referred to here? Well, according to our framework, we have seen that generalized contextuality involves operational fine tuning. So what I call operational fine tunings, it fits into our definition I gave so far, I showed you earlier. But what about non-locality? So non-locality, again, is the failure of Bell's local causality. You remember, so involves parameter independence and outcome independence. So it can arise either by, you know, breaking parameter independence, and we have shown that parameter independence is an operational fine-tuning, so it would mean, you know, it's a violation that involves an operational fine-tuning. It's like this is the non-contextuality part of the assumption of locality. But then we have also the possibility of being non-local by violating outcome independence instead. And the point is that outcome independence does not fit in the framework of operational fine-tunings. And we argue that this is a purely causal fine-tuning, okay? Indeed, if you go to the causal model approach, you know, this arises from the Markov condition, which is, you know, an expression of Reichenbach principle that says every correlation must be explained causally. So, good question. It doesn't fit because it has the observable variables on the right of the conditioning. So if you look at our definition, you know, it always is such that you have observable variable on the left and ontic variables given controlled variables, okay? And it cannot come from an operational approach.
So all fine tunings are of the form where, like one of the, some observable.
Yeah, so like in the Woods-Peckens paper, you derive both from a causal fine-tuning, but here we have shown that actually only one of the two is purely causal, because the other can fit in a just operational approach.
So if you define causal fine-tuning, you would say it's of this form, like it has a general form that some.
Let's say so, because definitely it cannot fit into our fine-tuning. And so what I want to say is that while contextuality is always involving an operational fine-tuning, non-locality might involve an operational fine-tuning, so might be thought as an expression of contextuality, or it's just a different thing. It's just, you know, about involving a causal fine-tuning. Okay, so there is a neat difference between the two, according to our framework. So it's not as commonly said, you know, non-locality is an instance of contextuality. Good. With this, I just wanted to conclude. So we have shown a mathematical framework for operational fine-tunings, you know, operational equivalence of experiments with stochastic processing, also preserve at the ontological level, and also we have shown that it fits well in category theory. We have seen that existing examples, you know, fit into the framework, and we have also seen that the framework is much more general, so probably there is ground for new fine-tunings and new no-go theorems. And then we have shown an application in terms of contextuality, not locality. Let me just conclude with the future challenges, because I've said that this is just, you know, the starting of a research program, and I think the next steps to undertake are the following. So the first one is to explore which are these possible new fine-tunings, and I think that particularly interesting ones would be the symmetry group fine-tuning, so where the stochastic processing is a symmetry group, and in particular I would be interested in, you know, Lorentz symmetry fine-tuning, because, you know, I kind of know that there are already like examples like ontological models for Bohmian mechanics or for collapse theories where Lorentz symmetry breaks at the ontological level. So I'm curious to know if there is actually a no-go theorem, you know, that says, you know, Lorentz symmetry holds at the operational level but cannot hold at the ontological level. I think this would be like a strong claim. It's like saying there is a preferred reference frame at the ontological level. Good. Then the other point is that, so we have defined fine-tunings, but now it would be also important to quantify them, so to give a resource theory of fine-tunings. And here, I want to say a few words also on the application of this for quantum computation. So I work on, you know, the eternal question of what is the origin of the quantum computational power, and, you know, the answer at the end you give after you study and you research is that the answer is always scenario dependent. So if you consider, you know, a case in which you have two parties that want to communicate, yeah, well, you're going to find that no locality is a resource. Then if you consider a game with just one party, or you cannot talk about no locality because you have just one party, and therefore you're going to find, I don't know, transformation contextuality. Then you consider, I don't know, model of computation, like measure-based quantum computation. There you perform like local projective measurements, so it's, you know, it's natural to talk about Cauchy-Specker contextuality as a resource. But you see, every time it's scenario dependent because by construction, you know, the phenomena that you can have can only arise in one scenario, not in another. But here instead, if we imagine, you know, to quantify a notion of fine-tuning for a given phenomenon, then you might just say, look, if you have this amount of fine-tuning, then you have quantum advantage. And maybe the this amount of fine-tuning might emerge as a contextual phenomenon, might emerge as a non-local one, as a something else, but what it matters is that it contains this amount of fine-tuning, this amount of departure from classical logic. But this is, you know, at the moment it's just an empty speculation, but this is why I think it might be more promising that, you know, the candidates that have been analyzed so far. Lastly, you know, the goal of this research program, at least for me, would be to develop a new ontological framework different from the standard one, where you describe quantum theory free of fine tunings. Okay? So basically we define fine tunings and we want to get rid of them. This would be like my goal. But yeah, of course it's still, you know, a long way to the top. With this, yeah, I conclude. Thanks.
So you see it as a strength of your framework that Bell-Mahmoud-Calvi does not fit. Is that right?
No, I don't see it as a strength. I see like something that has shed light on what is the nature of non-locality. So a question I have is, what is the relation between causal fine-tuning and operational fine-tuning in this sense? Because if, for example, you can prove, you know, that any causal fine-tuning imply an operational one, then this is a strong claim towards saying, you know, that causality must be fundamental, you know. Everything can be thought as a causal fine-tuning. But also the opposite would be a strong claim, because if you can prove that any fine-tuning actually can be thought as operational, then you would say, no, you shouldn't talk about causality in your ontology, it's just emergent. And so I'm saying that with this framework, we cannot, you know, reproduce like all Bell non-locality, but maybe there is a way of, you know, connecting it with a purely operational fine-tuning. But I think it's, you know, it's a question that...
So to follow up, you're talking about like a different framework for causal fine-tuning, which is sort of more demanding?
Yeah, maybe. What I'm saying is that, you know, I think if you marry the cause of studying causal models, then it means that you have in mind that the notion of causality is fundamental in some way, okay? And so you might it might be ideal for you to prove that actually every fine-tuning is causal, okay? And so that every fine-tuning implies an operational one. But instead, if you come from an operational approach and you want to say, no, causality is not fundamental, you know, you have to imagine it as emergent, you want to prove the opposite. And at least for me, it's still not clear. I mean, the idea that I have is that you can always build a causal fine-tuning by taking the operational one and adding causal hypotheses, okay? So adding some extra structure. For example, the outcome independence would mean, oh, add the causal hypothesis that you need to have this causal structure.
It's not obvious to me that you could, you can use that to accommodate Bell, you can use that to accommodate contextual, can you rephrase operational contextuality as a form of causality?
Yeah, so for me it's not the case, I feel it's not the case. But for example, I don't know if you read like Eric Cavalcanti's papers, yeah, he claims that contextuality is a causal fine-tuning. But I don't know. I think this, like, in a sense, gives an alternative interpretation to that, because in his case, what he does, basically connects the contextuality scenario to a non-locality scenario, and then he proves, oh, since you can do this mapping, then you have contextuality a causal fine-tuning. But according to me, this is just saying that, again, non-locality is a causal fine-tuning. Then if you can map it to a contextual one, it doesn't mean that the contextual one is causal. I think contextuality is not about causality, like the pure notion of contextuality is just operational. And this is like the approach we take, where you saw like contextuality is like the trivial case where you have the trivial processing.
So you distinguish between operational and causal fine-tuning. I was just wondering, did you give a reason for why you focus on why is there that restriction on?
Why is that?
The restriction on not like taking observed like uncontrolled observables on the right hand side of the conditional. Like you don't want that, like you, that's not included in your.
Yeah, I mean, because usually operationally what you have is that you observe something given that you control the variable such that you observe something. This is what does it mean operational. So if you instead say, you know, may consider given that I have some other observable quantities, this is not purely operational. It means you are already assuming something about the causality. You're assuming something about this outcome is implying this other.
And when you say free of fine tuning, so it's free of like whether operational or causal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because fine tunings, I mean, I reckon are bad, bad notions.
Think about this question of, like, here it was about preserving equations, right? But if you're trying to preserve approximate equality or something like that, like when things are not exactly equal, but kind of close enough that you expect that. And
yeah.
Not logically that close enough.
Yeah, but then, yeah, the problem is how you quantify closeness in the operational and the ontological level, and
yeah,
yeah how you
I
say.
I know that it shouldn't, like, I'm just wondering if you.
Yeah, but I think this is a question that, in a sense, we should address also. You know, if you want to build a resource theory, for example, how you quantify fine tunings, you might imagine to quantify in terms of how much they violate the ontological equation. Okay, also in this sense, you have to give a notion of, you know, meaningful notion of distance in that sense. But yeah, then comparing it to the an operational distance, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be a bit like signaling in Bell scenarios or something like that. Signaling. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Any more questions? Okay. Is today your last day here?
No, I'm staying another week.
Another week. Oh, fantastic. People have a chance to talk to you for another week. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.